Welcome to The Next Track, a podcast about how people listen to music today. I'm Doug Adams.
And I'm Kirk McElhern.
We self-produce The Next Track podcast and want to keep it ad-free, so we rely on contributions from listeners for support. You can help us by making a regular donation via Patreon. Visit patreon.com/thenexttrack. And thanks.
I got an email the other day. I'm on mailing list for a number of audio companies, just because I'm curious about what new products they have. And I got an email from Cambridge Audio about the new Evo 150 DeLorean Edition. It's a unique bare metal design inspired by the iconic DeLorean DMC-12. Now, if I remember correctly, the DeLorean, that's back in the 80s. Anyone who remembers that is, well, our age or around that.
Yeah, but if people have seen Back to the Future, they know what a DeLorean looks.
Okay. So know what a DeLorean is. It looks like the Tesla truck.
Cybertruck, yeah.
Right. And so we had already planned to do this episode on gear acquisition syndrome. And when I saw this, I was thinking, are people really going to update their all-in-one player just to get the DeLorean edition? Is it that bad? And this is a 2,100. This is a 2,100 pound streaming player, limited edition of 1,000 units worldwide.
There are people that are going to buy those because they have to have it. They collect these things. They acquire. They attract them. Whatever. I don't know what. But there are people that have disposable income that will see something like this and will say, "I've got to have that." And you and I, mere mortals with reasonable incomes, can't really just say off the cuff. After you get an email from Cambridge Audio, of all people, to say, "Hey, well, sign me up," you're not going to do that. But it is interesting to note that gear, because you do want to feed. Now you do have gear acquisition syndrome because you're still thinking about it. You're thinking, if I had the money, maybe I would.
No. The only reason I get these emails is to see what's new. There's a handful of brands that I follow. There's Cambridge Audio, there's NAD, there's KEF. There's a few brands that I follow just because I'm curious about what's new. We talked about this some months ago privately about, do I want to upgrade my Sonos amp, which serves my purposes perfectly? No, I think I bought it 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh my God, that's ancient history.
I know, that's like in childhood, right? But I was thinking a lot about, you don't need to upgrade an amplifier very often, right? Now, there may have been reasons why you might want to, right? Let's say you've got a TV set and you have an old 5.1 and you want to install a new 9.2 system. Well, your AV receiver is not going to handle that. So you can upgrade that and you can sell the old one on eBay, right? Which is what I've always done.
Or put it in the closet, which is what I've always done.
Right, exactly. Or you've just moved into a new house and you've got an extra space to get new speakers and that sort of thing. But the idea of upgrading an amplifier for any reason other than connectivity seems to me to be pointless. You've got your budget. You've spent as much as you want to on an amplifier. If you're going to spend that same amount, you hit the lottery different. But if you're going to spend the same amount on a new amplifier and it doesn't do anything different, then I don't see the point.
Okay, well, that's fair. Sure, that's fair enough.
But
I think people, you see, here's the thing. The thing about gear acquisition syndrome is it keeps you up at night. And you've got a gear hole. Your mind says you need something new.
Yep.
And you will lie around and go, you know, if I only had that home entertainment AV amplifier, that would make my whole setup perfect. Maybe, you know, but this is what you're talking yourself into to attempt to justify to getting this brand new thing because you got to have new. And I don't know how to combat it. It's got to be an OCD, an ADHD related thing because it's the hyperactivity of it. It's the your brain demands you get something new, some new thing. And it's musical instruments, it's audio equipment. With you, it's photography, I know. With people, it's tools, sporting gear.
Tools, I hadn't thought of that. You know, I was thinking earlier, people who like cooking, it's kitchen gear.
My daughter is nuts about power tools. She works with wood. She works with, She's crazy about, oh, maybe I'll just get that, you know, or maybe I'll buy that antique saw. Maybe I'll own that, you know, that sort of thing. There's that sort of, you know, bespoke stuff. You and I lust for those amplifiers that have the volume.
The VU meters.
The VU meters, yeah. Because there's something about that that makes our life perfect. I don't know what it would be. I actually went out one time and bought a separate thing that you plug into the speaker chain, yeah, just to give you the VUs. It wasn't as satisfying. It was fun for about 20 minutes, but it wasn't as satisfying as, you know, actually having it in the built into the actual gear.
The dopamine wears off quickly.
Does it? You know, that's what it is. You know, I could have spent maybe $500 on some device, and then 5 seconds later, it's like, well, what's next on the list? Where's that catalog? Let me have a look, you know, that kind of thing.
What's funny, just before we started recording, I was looking at a video on YouTube that someone posted in a group on Facebook showing a Japanese craftsman making teapots and teacups. And I love that sort of stuff. Let me show you the Kyusu that I bought myself for my birthday last year. So a Kyusu, I'll put a link in the show notes to what a Kyusu is. It's a small teapot with one handle on the side that sticks out. And it's meant so you hold it in your hand and your thumb holds the lid on when you pour it. It's a very practical item. I just love handmade ceramics. There's something about handmade ceramics that is, it marries the beauty and the utility of things. It's there's something, there's life in it compared to those salad bowls that I bought from John Lewis, half of which have broken already. And they break, you throw them in the trash, and you buy another one, and it doesn't mean anything.
So this is what you jerk off to get your dopamine rush, right? This is, I mean, that's essentially what it is, though, right? You have found the thing that,
but
you
see,
have found things that give you that rush.
But see, I don't buy a lot of these things. So a few years ago, I invested in 3 very good Japanese kitchen knives. Together, they would cost a decent amplifier, right, for the 3 of them. I don't plan to replace them anytime soon. They're excellent knives. They make my food preparation much easier. I don't need more. So it wasn't like I wanted to acquire more and more and more. This particular type of teapot I've never owned. I've got other teapots. I don't have a lot of teapots, actually. I've got a lot of little teacups, which I've collected over the years in various places, but I don't go out of my way to buy them. When I lived in France, anytime you'd go to a town, there would always be like a store selling local crafts. And so I'd buy a little teacup, what's called a Yunomi. It's a little, the tiny little Japanese teacups. And I'd buy one of them. It was 10 euros, whatever. And I've got about 2 dozen of them. I don't go out of my way to buy more, right? It's not that kind of acquisition. I do appreciate.
So you're not hoarding. You're not a hoarder or a compulsive collector.
No. I do appreciate them. And I'll change my teacups from time to time to rotate through them. But it's not an obsession. I think I've overcome the obsession. I've had gear acquisition syndrome in a number of things. But see, with me, it's a little bit complicated. And you know this very well, because sometimes I'll buy some sort of tech device because I know I can write an article about it, which will pay for the cost of the tech device.
Right.
And it's increasing my knowledge of the tech sphere. It's giving me possibilities to write about more things. It's a professional investment.
Right. I was just going to say, it's a professional investment. So, you know, it keeps you in the flow. But I will also say, knowing you personally, that you will attempt to find a justification for getting new gear, even if it doesn't have anything to do with professionalism. For instance, the camera you bought, the Leica, which is a pretty groovy camera. I think you worked your way up to it. It's like, I think I should get this, and here's why I think I should get this, and here's how I can justify it, and that sort of thing. Whereas someone like me would never, I can't justify getting that kind of camera, but you could.
Yeah. When I bought the Leica Q3 last year. See, I don't even remember when I bought it. I sold all of my Fujifilm gear, cameras and lenses, and I decided I want one camera, one lens. Now, I'm going to link in the show notes, because on my podcast, Photo Active, my co-host Jeff Carlson and I are also going to do an episode about gear acquisition syndrome. So I will link in the show notes when it comes out. I don't know which is going to come out first. I think this is going to come out before, but I'll go back and edit the show notes. In photography, it's very common because you start with, say, a 50 millimeter lens. or a, what's called a kit lens, a zoom lens, right? And then you say, well, I want a telephoto. Oh, I want a wide angle. And you can get a lot of lenses that you're going to use for specific things. And then when you look in your photo library and you sort by focal length, you see how often you use each lens. And you'll see that most of your shots are 50 or 35 or 28, whatever. And the rest is kind of like a bell curve that you don't even use the other ones. If you're a professional photographer, you need lots of lenses. If you decide all of a sudden, I want to shoot macro, so that's when you're getting really close up flowers and insects and all, you need a special lens. If you're going to shoot landscape, you might need special lenses. But the question is, how often do you use these lenses? Do you really justify buying them? And do you just use them a few times and put them aside because it was just a one-off? I would argue that a vacation to someplace to take photos with a specific lens would justify the cost of a lens because you want those memories of the vacation. But photography is notorious for gear acquisition syndrome.
Yeah, I think you, as soon as you get into photography, you're paying for stuff. You just, it doesn't stop. It's similar when you're a musical person. In fact, maybe we should mention the article we saw from Music Radar.
Right.
About the seven signs of music acquisition, which I thought was pretty clever. And they talk about it being about a musical instrument. It's like you've got a guitar and now I want another guitar. And I've never had that myself, but I get that about amps, pedals, cables, hardware on the guitar. I usually always swap things out and get better parts on the guitar whenever I buy a new guitar. So there is always that. How can I get it to be better? I know people who, when they started taking guitar lessons from square one, they didn't know anything about guitar, they would get a cheap guitar, and then 6 months later they go, you know, I think I'm going to get a new guitar because that will help me. That will help me play better or something. And that's when it starts. A new guitar isn't going to help you play better. It's just not. It might sound different, might help be, you could hold it differently.
Yeah. You know, maybe if your strings can be closer to the fingerboard, it's a little bit easy. No, there's reasons. There's definitely reasons.
But you don't make that decision on your own. You don't suddenly decide to say, that guitar is really pretty. I think I would look really good playing that guitar.
Yes.
That's not what you're supposed to do. Learn the chords, learn the fingerings, learn all that stuff first. Then you can go out and
yeah, but that's boring to learn the chords and the fingerings.
There, you see. Now, why are you learning to play the guitar to begin with then? Because, quite frankly, because sitting there strumming is pretty boring. There's no question about it. Just sitting there doing that all day.
Unless you're sitting around a campfire and you're passing joints and beers, and then it has its charm. Guitar pedals are interesting because I guess back in the day, you'd see a few of them, but now you've got millions of them because they're all integrated. They've all got chips and integrated circuits inside, whereas before they were all analog. I remember Jorma Kaukonen live, when he would do his solo shows, he'd be sitting at a chair. He'd have maybe two or three guitar pedals. He'd have the one for the flanger, right? He'd have one or two for other things, but he didn't have a rack of guitar pedals. I don't know if you call it a rack. I've seen pictures of some guitarists on stage with maybe 20 pedals. And can't you just play the guitar without any of that? It's
like, well, yes and no. I mean, that's the argument that people would make. But I mean, you want the sounds. You want it to sound the way it recorded on the album. Then this is what we need. You know, Brian May is going to be out there with, you know, a dozen pedals or so. Well, maybe actually fewer. Well, Brian May was probably a bad example. But there are, you know, you see it all the time with the floor pedals.
But guitars, how many does Keith Richards own? Was it 1,000, 3,500? I think there's conflicting things.
That's a weird thing, too. I got a present not too long ago, a book of Eric Clapton's guitars, and there's hundreds of them. He owns hundreds of guitars. And I don't know, man. That's weird. I don't know if I could own hundreds.
I think there's something different. That's collectionitis. That's not the same.
Okay.
Right? When the BBC had these four documentaries about each of the Rolling Stones a year or 2 years ago, the one about Charlie Watts was showing his collection of jazz instruments, and particularly drum kits that famous jazz musicians owned. And I believe that collection recently went up for auction. And he had hundreds of these things. And they were just in a warehouse, right? In his home warehouse. So that's a collectionitis. That's wanting to own, you know, Gene Krupa's drumsticks and whoever's saxophone. That's more, that's not gear acquisition syndrome, because there's no, You're not pretending you're going to use them.
Well, you know, right? That's, I wonder what you do think you're going to do with them. Just have them? Just own them? Just have them?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a crazy thing.
Yeah. People collect things. Collections are common.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking at lunch, like, so I talked about the kitchen knives I bought, and there's kitchen gear like air fryers. A lot of people have been buying air fryers. I bought an Instant Pot a few years ago. Wonderful. I don't use it a lot, but when I use it, it's a great device. I don't have an air fryer. I do have a sous vide thing. If you don't know what that is, I'll show you later. But the one thing I was thinking about kitchen gear that crosses the line between collection and gear is cookbooks. Because you're not going to read the cookbooks like you read other books, right? You're going to delve into them for a couple recipes. And in some of them, you'll learn a lot because they talk about techniques. In others, you're going to get half a dozen recipes that you may use. But it's a kind of thing that you're going to, oh, if I had this cookbook and I could make this dish, even though now you can get everything online. Personally, I prefer cookbooks to online. I prefer taking the time to sit down and read a book with nice pictures and explanations instead of going to a recipe where here's 1,500 words on how I discovered this recipe, because Google wants articles to be long for SEO. And if you scroll down to the bottom, you'll see the actual recipe. I'd rather see someone explaining these techniques in a book where you have a continuity. But yes, it is a sort of collecting gear acquisition, I'd say.
They're foiling your gear acquisition, essentially, by preventing you from getting to the cream of the correspondence. I suppose so. I don't cook that much to think about that correlation, but what would the correlation be in music, or would it be like
sheet music?
Oh, sheet music, or would it be like scrolling, like for you used to be subscribed to magazines, like, you know,
yeah,
Stereo Review and things like that. I mean, that stuff was,
that's gear acquisition syndrome review.
Yeah, exactly what it is. Because one of the reasons I used to read all those magazines was just to see the pictures of the new gear, for sure.
And to see the ads.
Yeah. Pictures,
to know what you can get where, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Headphones. We both have a lot of headphones, but we do this professionally.
Well, that's our excuse. That's our justification. But yeah, I love buying headphones.
Well, I don't. Oh. I don't particularly. I mean, I've got a few. And so right now I'm using AirPods Pro because I really wanted to be wireless. And I've gone through a number of headphones since we've been doing these podcasts. But I don't really. It's a tool for me, headphones. It's okay. If I want to listen to music when I'm walking, yes, I put on headphones. But then that's a tool. I don't see it as gear in the sense of, ooh, I want this particular headphone because it's so much better, because I know it doesn't make a difference, that it's not going to sound that much better. It's just going to cost more.
When we were doing radio, everybody pretty much had the same level of headphone. Nobody cared about the headphones, strangely enough. I mean, you'd talk about, oh, I got my cans, but whatever you preferred to wear was fine. But I don't remember ever seeing a guy and saying, oh, I wish I had his headphones,
yeah,
or something like that. That just never would happen.
Well, it's because you were only using them for that professional usage. What mattered most was comfort, because you'd have them on for hours a day. You wanted to hear well, but you didn't care if you heard the music, because you weren't listening to the music, right?
Not really.
You were just monitoring what's going on. You just want the comfort. So headphones, no. TVs. Now, I find it interesting when people... TV sets, you know, those flat rectangular things.
Yeah, yeah.
I find it interesting how many people tend to... It used to be you'd upgrade your TV when the old one died, right? Then, I believe it was 1998 in France for the World Cup, they introduced widescreen 16:9 TVs. These were CRT TVs in 16:9. I don't know if they ever hit the States.
Oh, man, it would be huge,
yeah,
right? I mean, how big were they?
They were extremely heavy. It took two people to carry it.
I'll bet. Yeah.
So when I bought one because the old TV we had at the time was kind of old and it was relatively small. And it wasn't particularly for the World Cup, but there were a lot of sales. So I bought one, kept it for many years. But I've never really... So like people now, ooh, you have an HD TV. Ooh, you have a 4K. Now you can get an 8K. Now you can get an OLED. Now you can get a micro OLED, and et cetera, et cetera. I bought a new TV a year and a half ago, replacing a TV that I'd had for 6 years. Because I have a dedicated TV room, I wanted something bigger, and I can't see any reason to replace that TV. I don't want 8K. I don't really, first of all, there's not much 8K content, and there probably never will be. But you get to a point with some of those things where if you don't have the gear acquisition syndrome, you can say, this is fine. If you do, you're looking at all the new TV reviews at Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, and you're saying, ooh, I want this one, I want that one. Here's a transparent one. Here's the one that rolls up on the wall, right? And they've got all sorts of gizmos. And it's like, no one ever used to buy new TVs in case they, unless they broke theirs or threw them out of a hotel room window, right?
Well, there's such a, there's such a component now. Now they're, it's not just a standalone thing anymore. So since it becomes part of a component system, or can become part of a component system, you know, it falls into gear because if I just updated this, then I would be, then if I just update the bar and if I just update the app and if I, whatever. So I think the TV has become componentized.
Well, one of the things is that the TV industrial complex is trying to force people to upgrade by introducing new decoding standards, right? So you've got, I don't even know what they all are. I know mine does Dolby Digital and the Apple TV, which is connected to mine, does Dolby Digital. But there are a number of these things that if you don't have the right TV and the right version of HDMI in the TV in particular, you won't be able to get all of the features.
Yeah.
So they're trying to build some planned obsolescence into it.
That's too bad because that just aggravates my gear acquisition syndrome. That just kind of compels you to have gear acquisition syndrome because you've got to be nervous now. When is my TV or my gear not going to be, you know, top of the line, state of the art, whatever?
Well, not even top of the line. When is it not going to be compatible?
Oh, okay, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. So cars is another thing I'm thinking of. Now, there's this really weird thing in the UK. License plates have two letters followed by two digits followed by three letters. Twice a year, the two digits change. And so I'm telling you, so like when I bought my current car, it's a 22, which means it was the second half of 2022. I think 21 was the first half. And so you'll get an email from the car dealer with, oh, we've got the new 73 plates in just now. And I don't even know how it works. It's like 2 and 1 and 7, and they've got some sort of, and it's like people are actually obsessed about having the latest plate on the car. Now, you don't just get a plate. The plate lives with the car, right? So you have to buy a new car if you want to get a new plate. And I just can't figure that out.
That is the strangest, one of the strangest British things I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anybody over here has, well, I mean, there are a few people who get what they're called vanity plates, right?
Yeah.
And you can get something interesting on your plate if you really want it. But other than that, nobody really has any care. You know, that's what bumper stickers are for, right?
Well, you do have model years in the States still, right? They don't do that over here.
Oh, yeah.
Since they only update cars every few years, they don't put model years on them.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And, I mean, what does the 2024 version of this car have compared to 2023? It's got a different color on the gauge for whatever, right?
But you know that somebody knows, and it will make a difference to them.
Yep.
When they add it to their garage, after they finish building the extension on their garage to accommodate the new car.
Cars are interesting because I knew some people when I was young in the 1970s who would take their engines apart and who would put better carburetors and better spark plugs and all that. But is that gear acquisition syndrome when you're improving something, right? You think of someone who buys a bicycle and he gets a better derailleur and a better seat and all. Is that really the same? I guess in some ways it is.
It's like I said about, you know, you get the guitar. It's like you don't want a new guitar, but you want new parts. You want better parts. And yeah, with a car, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, you're right. I used to know guys in high school. They'd rip the engine out and they'd put in new parts. They'd go down to the auto store and buy like the groovy parts and put them in and drive around the neighborhood and say, smell my car or whatever they were doing.
The weirdest thing to me is like you're paying 1,000 or 1,500 pounds more to get wheels that aren't the default wheels. It's like you don't even see them when you drive. Do you think that when you're driving at 60 miles an hour down a motorway, anyone's judging you on your wheels that they can't even see?
Yes, the other motorheads are. Absolutely. They are definitely. They know how those rims look when they're traveling at 65 miles an hour. They can probably ID the brand and the make and the style.
So you know what this all comes down to, right?
Sin?
Duca.
Oh, Duca. Yes, it does.
We're back to Duca again. Yeah. I want this and I can't have it. It's Duca.
Yeah.
This thing is out there. It's tempting me. It's Duca. My thing's not good enough. I'm not satisfied with my thing anymore. It's Duca.
Yep. Duca, man. Be the death of me.
Okay, should we do next tracks?
Yep.
I don't know if I ever picked the original edition of this as a next track. I think this came out in 2015. It's called Sleep by Max Richter. It was an 8-hour composition, mellow, laid back. You'd almost call it new age music, but it was more composed, and it was meant to be a sleep soundtrack. And they did concerts in a number of places where they put in beds, and you'd get a ticket and you'd lie in the bed and you would sleep throughout the concert. It's kind of a waste of money, but you'd wake up from time to time, hear the music, and go back to sleep. And it's an interesting idea. It's attractive. So Deutsche Grammophon just released what they call Sleep Piano Edition single. It's 25 minutes long. It's 3 tracks from 7.5 to just under 10 minutes. And they're piano versions of three of the themes in Sleep, because there are a number of themes that repeat. These aren't necessarily piano arrangements of specific tracks, but it is, as the description on Apple Music says, Richter's iconic Sleep album distilled in 3 hypnotic piano tracks. It's quite nice. I kind of like music like this. Sometimes when I'm lying in bed reading in the evening, I put on music like this, relaxing, mellow music that doesn't demand too much attention. It's borderline ambient. I'd say it's a bit more composed than ambient, but it still functions as ambient music. It's relaxing. So if you want a 25-minute relaxation session, lie down in a comfortable space, put this on in your wonderful headphones, and check out the piano edition of Max Richter's Sleep. Doug, what have you got?
Here's one from the early 90s, and at that time, John Hiatt, Ry Cooder, Nick Lowe, and Jim Keltner had just done some work on a John Hiatt album, and they thought, gee, that was fun. Why don't we form a group and record an album and tour, and, you know, we'll become even more famous than we already are. Now, this is John Hiatt, Ry Cooder, Jim Keltner, and Nick Lowe, and they put out an album. They call themselves Little Village. And the record is okay. I remember when it came out, I was really looking forward to hearing it because, I mean, hey, these are 4 superstar, not only session guys, but also really great on their own. But, and you'd figure, well, all together. And while the record is okay, they never did any more than that one. Now, the record did have 2, I would call, sort of hits on it. One was called She Runs Hot, which ostensibly is about an automobile. And the other one was called Solar Sex Panel, which is the expression you see on T-shirts worn by old balding guys in Fort Lauderdale. Anyway, those were fairly popular songs for a brief period of time. As I said, they went on tour, but they just decided not to bother with another album, which is too bad because I think they might have done a better job. They didn't really care for the record. They thought they spent too much time making it. The record company wasn't kind of lukewarm about it, so they didn't get a lot of promotion. It's kind of unfortunate. As a relic, though, of these 4 guys, again, it's John Hiatt, Ry Cooder, Nick Lowe, and Jim Keltner. It sounds pretty good. I haven't heard it in a number of years, so I'm looking forward to giving it a shot. Little Village, their only eponymous album, is my next track. This was episode number 278 of The Next Track. Thanks for listening. You can start or join a conversation in the comments section of this episode's show page at our website. You'll also find links to some of the things we talked about in the show notes for this episode. It's all at thenexttrack.com. And we hope you'll support The Next Track by making a regular donation via Patreon. We're ad-free and self-sustaining. We depend on the listener support of our Patreon patrons to keep us going. So visit patreon.com/thenexttrack. Help us out. We appreciate it. I'm Doug Adams, and for Kirk McElhern, thanks again. We'll talk to you next time.